Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 19th day of April, Anno Domini 2025, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites, finally. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 17 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news, but first, welcome back, Steve.
Thank you.
We had excellent coverage for you, but we're glad you're back.
Yes. It's one of those where it's nice to be on a trip, but it's always so good to be home.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
Which is why I wore my No Place Like Home t-shirt today.
I saw that. Yes, very nice. The verdict is in, and Google has been found to illegally hold online ad tech monopolies. According to the ruling...
What?
For over a decade, Google has willfully engaged in a series of anti-competitive acts to acquire and maintain monopoly power in the publisher ad server and ad exchange markets for open web display advertising, tying its publisher ad server and ad exchange together to establish and protect its monopoly power in these two markets. At trial, the Department of Justice argued that Google's ad business expanded in order to choke out competitors and to benefit only Google. They argued that Google rigged ad auctions, allegedly controlling multiple parts of services used to place ads all over the internet, thus giving itself an unfair advantage in various markets. Now, Google, which already is facing down a potential breakup, spinning off Chrome as a remedy to its monopoly in general search, faces threats of additional breakups. Analysts have warned that Google's $95 billion with a B dollar ad empire is too big to sell. But the DOJ has argued that untethering Google's ad products is the only way to ensure that Google doesn't lock the majority of publishers into paying higher fees on the publisher side because they can't afford to drop Google's ad exchange. Judge Leone Brekema, found that Google's anti-competitive acts substantially harmed Google's publisher customers, the competitive process, and ultimately consumers of information on the open web. While the DOJ largely claims the win, Google is apparently not considering this a loss yet. In a statement, Leanne Mulholland, Google's vice president of regulatory affairs, confirmed that Google plans to appeal. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google loses ad monopoly trial, faces breakups. And your choices are, it's about time. That's good, I think. That's bad, I think. I don't know what to think. And wait, Google does ads? So far, we have 29 votes. And It's About Time is in the lead, followed closely by I Don't Know What to Think. Excuse me, I beg your pardon. 31 votes. And the thing hasn't changed that much. And if you have an opinion on this, you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 800-790-0415. I should mention that we are still in a pledge drive. We seem to be stalled at $49,000 out of the $70,000 we need, as you can see from the thermometer on our website. We need your help. We need your help. There is no question that you listen to this station, or you would not be hearing my voice. There is no question that you like this show, or you wouldn't tune in. But the reality is that we don't put this show on without your help. We need your dollars to keep this show and this station on the air. And honestly, pledging is super simple. And yes, if it, we have pledged drive levels, but I know that, you know, these are the times they are. And if you can only give a few bucks, please give those few bucks. We need the help. If you call our number this week, you will talk to the lovely and talented Cheryl, who will be delighted to take your pledge, or she will pass you on gladly, without judgment, to talk to us. And, of course, you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. Just hit that big red Donate Now button. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. What's up, Ed?
Good afternoon, guys. First, let me endorse being a member. I get good help from you, and sometimes when it's not directly applicable to me, it's still in.
We love to hear that. Thank you. And another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. And last week, you helped me upgrade my old MacBook Air, which is now running Catalina, so thank you very much for that. The problem that I'm facing now is that I have two old iPhones, one's a 6 and one's a 7, that I use just for playing podcasts. And I cannot link it to either one of them to this computer, although I could link the 6 to my old computer, which is also a MacBook Air, Carolina.
What happens when you try?
It shows up, but...
let me see. Apple made a change. iTunes used to be the management software for...
Music. I'm sorry, it's music.
Right, all right. So now you manage your device in the Finder. You don't manage it in the music app anymore.
Right. So when I plug it in using the USB, it shows up as a name and shows me what's on it. But if I try to load one of the playlists that I have, it won't do that.
Do you get an error message?
Nope. I just sort of slide it up over iPhone 7, and it, sort of...
That's not how you do it.
And it won't let me add a playlist either.
Right, that's not how you do it.
Okay.
You, in the general tab, you tell it which playlists you want to sync. And do you remember
general tab on
in the Finder when you select your iPhone?
Okay, so
I'm trying to find a link. Do you know what iOS the phone is running? Yeah, it's mostly the computer though.
Yeah, I'll tell you in a moment.
Music management.
Settings general about. So 12.5.7.
Okay.
On the 6.
That's all right. We don't need to know that. Do you see the general tab when you bring up the phone?
On the Finder?
Right. Open the Finder, and in the sidebar on the left, you should see the phone and click on that.
Just a minute. I'm going to find it now.
You had the phone open already, right?
Yes.
The phone icon, the phone window is on the screen.
No, it shows... It there. It shows its name. And if I click it, then, yes, it shows me the general. Okay, general. Yeah.
And then under the music tab, you select which songs, which playlists, which artists that you want to sync to the phone.
Okay. So if I sync... Selected, okay. It's not allowing select. Oh, I just, okay.
Yeah, it's all nothing or selected are the three options.
Okay, I don't want to wipe it.
If it's asking you to wipe it, that means you have it synced to a different computer. You're only allowed to sync your phone to one computer at a time. By the RIAA and MPAA lawsuits that filed against Apple 20 years ago.
Okay.
Because they don't want you to plug your phone into somebody else's computer and copy all their music illegally.
Or give them your music.
Or give them your music illegally.
Okay. Okay. But...
So you'll have to erase the phone to sync it to this computer if you want to change anything on the phone.
Okay, well, I don't have much on the 7 yet, so I'll...
On the phone, you can go to the music store and buy new music that way. You don't have to sync it to the computer.
But if you've already got the music and that's the music you want on it, you're going to have to reformat that phone.
Yeah.
It's just MP3s from, like, sound bites and news programs and such. But, okay, so I will sync... entire music library. Okay.
If it'll fit. That was the other option. The used to be it would sync everything, but then you started getting too much music that would fit on the early 4 gig and 8 gig models.
Right.
So then you had to start picking which thing you were doing.
No, it's a 12 gig iPhone. 128 gig iPhone.
That's good.
So, okay.
All right.
Good. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep.
Have fun. It's very tough, I have to admit, when you have older technology to keep up to date.
Right, and Apple made a major change in Catalina, splitting out the iTunes app, which started out as a music player, and then it did TV shows, and then it did apps, and then it did books, and then it did too many things. So they split all that out into separate apps. And now managing your iPod and your iPhone are now done in the Finder. The screen is exactly the way it was in iTunes. They pulled it out of iTunes and put it into the code and put it into the Finder. It looks exactly the same as it used to. But you don't manage the device in the music app anymore. You manage your music in the music app, and you manage the device in the Finder.
Interesting. And so you put on and remove music from the Finder, but then you... massage it all.
Right, you buy new music, you create playlists in the music app.
Got it. That's interesting.
Now, it's different on Windows, because there's still the iTunes app. They didn't split it out on Windows, only on Mac.
Interesting.
So we keep wondering when they're going to do that on Windows, too.
Well, they may not. I mean,
they may not
care.
Yeah.
I have a friend... who's a fairly big noise at Microsoft. And she made contact. She's going to be in town. She wanted to go have lunch. I said, okay, here's my phone number. Then I wrote back and said, oh, that's my Google Voice number. Are you guys allowed to use that? she's a sweet. She was one of my students, the kids who worked for me, my minions.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked for me for a long time. She was really good. Most of my kids were really good. I got to be honest. Most of my kids were really, really good. I was very lucky. Well, they're at RIT. They're good kids to begin with. I mean, that's just the way that is. But I was very lucky. I think I'm hearing music
almost.
That's the
12:30 break, yep.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Mike Oden.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Mike rocking out at the console there, having too much fun. All right, security news. A sophisticated phishing scam is taking advantage of Google security flaws to convince people that the malicious emails and websites are legitimate. The text of the email uses correct terminology and doesn't contain any typos or broken English. The message itself is considered valid and signed by Google. It's sent from noreply@google.com, which is a legitimate company address. The email itself passes a test that verifies the authenticity of a message. This looks completely legitimate. Clicking a link in the email takes you to a support portal that looks like an actual Google page. The page is even hosted on Google Sites, a platform where people can create and run their own websites. Using such a platform adds legitimacy to the scam, as people assume it's real, it's the real deal. But it's not, so be careful what you click on. Car rental giant Hertz Corporation warns it suffered a data breach after customer data for its Hertz, Thrifty, and Dollar brands was stolen in zero-day theft attacks on February 10, 2025. Customer data include driver's licenses. That's bad. Kidney dialysis firm DaVita disclosed Monday it suffered a weekend ransomware attack that encrypted parts of its network and impacted some of its operations. DaVita is a major provider of kidney care services in the United States, operating over 2,600 outpatient treatment centers that provide dialysis to those suffering from kidney disease. A set of 57 Chrome extensions with 6 million users have been discovered with very risky capabilities, such as monitoring browser behavior, accessing cookies for domains, and potentially executing remote scripts. These extensions are hidden, meaning they don't show up on Chrome Web Store searches, nor do search engines index them, and can only be used if the user has a direct URL. Again, never install a browser extension that isn't coming from a legitimate app source. Swiss cybersecurity firm Prodeft has launched a new initiative called Sell Your Source, where the company purchases verified and aged accounts on hacking forums to spy back on cyber criminals. The goal is to use these accounts to infiltrate cybercrime spaces and communities, collecting valuable intelligence that could lead to the exposure of malicious operations and platforms. American business services giant and government contractor Conduent disclosed yesterday, that client data were stolen in a January 2025 cyber attack. Conduent is a business services company that provides digital platforms and solutions for government and commercial clients in transportation, healthcare, customer experience, and human resources. I'll say for you feeling today, give us a call. If you dare. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
We're seeing a lot of this that's become called a supply chain attack. The way a lot of software is written, there are libraries, you know, from GitHub and Python. What's the big one for Python? Repository. Whatever. Different repositories.
Pip,
where people have already written code. I need code that draws a line on the screen. I don't have to write that myself. Someone else already wrote that, so I'll just use their code. There have been big issues where the person who wrote that code originally, for some reason, decides to retire, sell their company. A lot of times it's they get an offer they can't refuse. You know, if someone comes along and wants to buy Ask Nick for $10 million, what are you going to do?
sell, baby.
And then so they use that reputation, put malicious code in that library, and then in this case, 6 million users get that new malicious code without realizing it, because now the good thing has turned bad. And thank God for researchers that find out that happens and let people know. Google can go in and remove the bad apps. And hopefully those, you know, 57 Chrome extensions are used by 6 million people.
Yeah.
So these are very, very popular extensions.
Right.
And if one of them turns bad or goes rogue, that's horrible.
Right. So it's always important to be aware of that stuff. That's not the reality is that's nothing you did wrong. Mm-hmm. If you get caught by that, you didn't do anything wrong. In the case of those particular things, you installed an extension that isn't in the App Store.
Right.
That's a problem. But speaking of the, you know, if they infiltrate a library on PIP or whatever, or GitHub, those are common things.
Yep.
Right? A million people will download. Well, like Steve said, let's say I want to access a database from my program. I don't have to write the underlying code. Somebody's already written that. All I have to do is install the library.
Yep.
If that library has been hacked, then I'm perpetrating the hack, even though I didn't do anything wrong. You, the user, didn't do anything wrong. It just is what it is.
Yeah.
And programmers can't, you know, first to rewrite everything all the time is just cost prohibitive. People aren't going to do it.
And you're going to make mistakes in that code. But if someone else has already written it and it's tested and working,
right,
that's faster.
But on top of that, if I download PIP code or something from GitHub, I'm not going to spend a week combing through the code looking to see if there's something bad.
And one of the things that's happened is that sometimes that code relies on other code, which relies on other code. And so it might be three developers away,
right,
that turned malicious. And then suddenly you've got a malicious program in your computer.
Right. It's pretty tough right now to keep clean, but we're trying. It's a mess out there.
One of the sneakiest ways, I don't know, that first happened is, say I need that code that accesses a database, and the current version is 12. Well, the bad guy writes a malicious version and names it 1,000.
Right.
Every program that relies on that code is going to download the latest version.
Right.
So when the good guys come out with 43, 1,000 is still newer. And
right.
That
right.
one's going to get downloaded.
Because what they say, what most programmers do when they're recompiling something, they say go to GitHub and get the latest.
Yep.
And if I'm running 12 and the latest is 1,000, I'm going to skip 43.
Yep.
And that happens too. So people are starting to try to be more careful, but it is what it is.
And a lot of the code repositories have went offline to try to revamp their security. So now you have to have a registered account to submit code. It's got to be vetted before you submit it. There's two-factor authentication going on to try to make sure only legitimate authors submit code. But then someone steals a security token. There's one going on now in GitHub. Someone stole the security token to a legitimate company and is publishing fake code with legitimate authentication.
Yep.
So it's even hard. Damn those bad guys. If only they'd use their powers for good.
Well, exactly. All right, I'm not sure what order these are in, but I will start with Jay from Rochester. What's up, Jay?
Hey, guys. Love the show and your attitude. This is maybe a fundamental question, but I think a lot of people are going to face this because of the Windows 10 lack of support, which I guess is coming later this year.
Yep.
So this is my first time upgrading the operating system of a computer. Usually I've just left it alone and either bought a new computer, so I haven't really had the... had this issue. So I'd like to know and get your opinion on backing up if you don't necessarily trust cloud backups. I've got a USB. I was able to find one. And the question is it better to procedurally back up all my data, my photos, my files, or do the system backup, which I believe also backs up some of the settings on your apps like Excel and Word and your Firefox and whatnot?
Both. Honestly,
both. Okay.
You can never have too many backups.
That's right. But you definitely, absolutely, absolutely want to back up your data separately from everything else. Because even
right.
in the...
Okay, so...
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, does that mean it's a two USB drive type of thing, one for the raw data and then a separate USB where you can do whatever the system backup does? Because I don't really understand what else the system backup is doing other than transferring. I know it's more than the data, but...
Right, and the answer to that is yes. You really want two separate drives. One just as your standard backup, which is all your data. And you should be doing that regularly. And you should be doing it in more than one place. But
yes, I've seen some great stuff on your website on multiple places. You know, we have at least three different places, maybe the cloud, a separate physical location, and then your physical location.
Yep.
And memory being cheap, relatively. That's not too bad. Yeah.
Right.
So then once you do that, and you let Microsoft do the upgrade of the operating system from 10 to 11, what happens after that? How do you get your data and all your settings back into the new operating system?
If everything goes as expected,
sorry, go ahead.
You have to do nothing. It just upgrades the OS and all your programs and data are still there. But almost never does it go as expected.
Right. Generally speaking, the big thing is your data. Generally speaking, the system upgrades fine. But having that backup is good. And then there's a restore command. Where you did the backup, there's also a restore command. So you can just restore from that system backup. But what often happens is the system updates fine and there's a corruption of your data or loss of your data entirely.
There have been a couple of times where a Windows upgrade moves your data out of the way, does the Windows upgrade, and then forgot to move it back.
Right.
So you end up with an empty drive when it comes back.
Well, it's still there. Okay. You just can't see it because it's in a hidden directory.
Yeah.
So,
okay, and if you can't see it, it's basically not accessible, right?
Well, yeah. But it's taking up space on your drive. So if you find the hidden directory, then you can just unhide it or bring it all back from that
and
move it from that to your documents or wherever.
There's also a caveat on how old your computer is and how many updates and upgrades you've done. So if this started as like a Windows 7 computer and you did the 8 and then the 8.1 and then the 10, a lot of people like backing up their drive 2 or 3 times, erasing the computer, installing Windows 11 clean, and then restoring their data. You get a cleaner Windows. In fact, we know people listen to the show, is they erase their drive and start over again every 6 months.
Right.
To stop issues from creeping into Windows. They have time and knowledge to do that because it's not something for the faint of heart.
Right.
Well, this is about a 4.5-year-old computer. It's still running great speed-wise, and I think Windows 10 was the original install on it. So
there you go. So, yeah, upgrading to 11 theoretically will work fine. Having those backups is important, and the hope is you don't need them.
And would you ever I saw Windows had an option that if you don't like the backup or if you don't like the upgrade within a certain number of days, you can undo it. But to me, that seems at this point in stage, if they're not going to support 10 anymore, you're creating a security issue for yourself if you don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Get the full upgrade.
You're exactly right.
Right. So if you disconnect that computer from the internet, don't install any new software from disk. So that theoretically would be terminal, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I love it. Great advice. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your show and all you do.
Thank you.
All right,
there you go. And I hope you're a member. And the rest of you should be members. Give us a call and become a member. You can two ways to do it, actually. The technological way is to go to our website at jazz901.org and hit the big red Donate Now button. The other way is to give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Talk to the lovely and talented Cheryl, and she would be happy to take your pledge and or pass you on to us. And our next caller, is it Matthew or Larry next? You don't know either. Matthew. We'll say Matthew. Pretend it's Matthew. Matthew, is it you?
Yeah, me, Matt.
Okay, what's up, Matt?
Why does Yahoo Mail work bad in Google Chrome? This thing is crazy killing me. I mean, I think they just want you to force you into Gmail, but I can't. The things and the picture sizes, everything, and never comes up right. It's crazy.
I know Yahoo Mail just went through an update in their interface. We got a lot of calls from people saying it looks different. change it back. I can't. It's the other end.
I can't even get the Windows and the things, and they want you to download the app, and then they download the app, and the app is crap.
So you go to the Yahoo Mail website, and they tell you to download the app, but the app is for a mobile device, not a computer.
Right.
No, I'm on a Chromebook.
So they want you to load the Chrome OS app, yeah.
Yeah, it's really frustrating, though. You would think, you know, these guys would do good stuff to, you know, fix some problems.
Well, it's their competitor. Yahoo and Gmail are competitors, so you don't want to go out of your way to make your competitor's stuff look good on your system. That's just a suggestion. It's a rumor. I have no knowledge of that.
I understand that because I put in keywords on the search engine, and on my Roku, little ads come up from the area I live here, and like, what they're searching, they get my information and everything.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the way it works.
I just think that Yahoo Mail is garbage. I even tried to download the Yahoo Mail app. Still garbage. I just use Gmail.
And a lot of people have done that. Yahoo is similar to Google in that their main business is selling ads, but they're a little more overt about it. So in your Yahoo Mail interface, it's full of ads. At least the Gmail interface doesn't have that many ads in the interface yet.
They make money off of us as a customer instead of having a good service, which really is not too, you see what I mean? I just kind of don't like that, And Gmail's better, I think, but Yahoo sucks.
Yep, okay, thanks. Thanks, Matthew. We appreciate your call.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's nothing we can do the other end. Make sure you're running.
There's nothing you can do. I mean, that's just, this is what Yahoo wants.
Make sure you're running the latest version of Chrome.
Right.
So, well, sometimes that's the problem. Something changed in Chrome that doesn't work right with Yahoo, and then Yahoo will fix whatever that was, or Chrome will fix whatever broke. And so sometimes in a week or two, it'll fix itself, and and it will be okay.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys, and happy Easter to you all.
And the same to you, my friend.
Thank you, sir. I have a question. The other night I did something, and it said it wanted to download Google or Chrome extensions, and I was just listening to what you were talking about maybe a half hour ago. My question is, how do you know when an extension is bad or good or not what you want?
Short answer is you don't.
Right. It's a lovely question. If we had the answer to that, we'd be richer. But the short answer is, if it doesn't come from a legitimate source, for example, from the Chrome Web Store, and this is no guarantee, but the likelihood is much more that it will be fine if it comes from the Chrome Web Store or the Amazon Web Store. That's for Android, but if it comes from the Chrome Extensions Web Store, or if you're being asked by a legitimate source for a legitimate reason. So, you go to a website that you always go to, and it says, do you want to download our extension to make life easier for you? Well, if you've been on a page that says, hey, we've got a new extension, download it, then, maybe you want to do that.
The problem becomes sometimes it's an ad on that web page you went to from a third-party source claiming to be from the first party.
Right. So the thing I would do is verify before I download.
Yeah.
So if you can call or write to the company that wants you to download something, and they say, oh, yeah, that's legit. We want to do that.
Google the name of the thing it wants to download.
Right.
Yeah. What it might have been in your case is Apple recently released a Chrome extension so that Chrome can read your Apple passwords. So right now, if you have passwords in Safari and passwords in Chrome, they don't talk to each other.
Right.
And so Apple released an extension so Chrome can see your Apple passwords to help unify those two environments.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a thing.
It's a thing, yes. So it's a convenience thing, so that if you're using Chrome and you want to log in, so I just did it here. I logged into my Yahoo account on Chrome, but Chrome didn't have my Yahoo password because that's in Safari. So I manually went over and got it. But if I'd installed this extension, it would be able to get it automatically.
The reality is that when you give someone your passwords, whether it's Apple or Google or anybody else, the possibility of a data breach goes up, right? So it could happen on either end. So give your passwords to nobody or to both of them. They're both good companies that do really good security. So, you know, the choices, the likelihood is you'll be semi-okay.
And the advantage is that you don't have to keep going back and forth between browsers. To get your passwords, each browser knows all your same passwords. The biggest issue is it makes your Google password and your Apple password much more important. If someone gets into your email, they can get into all of your other accounts by doing a password reset. And there have been cases where someone who's gotten into a Google account, and I'm saving all my passwords in Google, and now you've got all those other passwords. So make sure you have a good password on your email account. Make sure you've got two-factor authentication on your email account. We always talk about make sure on banking accounts and money accounts because there's money.
Right.
Make sure it's also on your email because that's the most important thing. I started seeing some services don't even bother having a password anymore. Every time you log in, they send you a one-time code right now, which right. I suppose okay. is okay. But I like having two factors, not just one.
Right.
Okay, well, I thought I would just ask because I said, well, how am I supposed to know? And it seems like the more sophisticated we get, it's kind of like Scotty said on Star Trek, the more sophisticated the starship, the easier it is to break.
Yep. That's absolutely true.
All right, well, thank you so much. At least I know what to do and what to expect now.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Yep. Thanks for calling, Larry.
All righty. Yep, bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's tough. I know a guy who never saw a question he wouldn't answer yes to.
Mm-hmm.
And he was complaining that his Chromebook was lousy because he couldn't see anything.
Yep.
So I said, well, show me your Chromebook. He opened it up. The entire screen was button bars, task bars. Yep. There must have been 30 of them. And all you could see was one tiny little line of text at the bottom for the website. And, you know, most of them were junks. Half of them were stealing his data. And there's no, you know, Chrome OS in particular, very secure unless you let people in.
There's a scene in the IT crowd where the IT guy comes to the one director and, oh, my God, what is that? I haven't seen that one since the 90s. What are you doing? Let me clean that up. No, I need those everywhere they are. Yeah. Dancing, baby, no.
Right. All right, we are going to, that music tells us the first hour of this show, the first 40 minutes of this show, is in the books. But don't despair. There's a whole nother full hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. And that will include Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. And please try to remember we are on a pledge drive. We need your dollars. Please. It's getting to the point where we're desperate. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Cheryl will be happy to take your information. Or you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. We will see you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I want to thank Jerome for his donation to our station. Thank you so very much, Jerome. We appreciate it. Again, we are in a pledge drive, and that means we need your support. This station doesn't stay on the air without you. When we say member supported, we ain't kidding. That's how this station works. We don't get government money from any level of the government, and we don't exist without you. So please help us out. If you like this show, if you like this station, if you like what you hear right now, please make that pledge. You can do it one of two ways. You can log on to the Jazz 90.1 website at jazz901.org and hit that big red donate now button. Or you can call the lovely and talented Cheryl, who will be happy to take your pledge and or pass you on to us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415, as she did for Francis from Webster, New York. What's up, Francis?
Yeah, how you doing? I spoke with you a while ago, a month or so ago, about the music app for Apple. Not being able to import CDs anymore. And I just got another development on that. The CDs that I have imported and were on my music app have now all been deleted. And the only thing on there are just things, I guess, that I purchased from Apple. So it looks like they're trying to eliminate the CD feature.
No, that's a bug on your computer, because I just ripped a CD. Yeah, I just ripped a CD the other day.
With the music app.
With the music app, yeah. Okay. Did you move the folder destination in some way? Did you upgrade the operating system or anything like that? Recently?
No.
Because it sounds like it lost track of where your music folder is, so it doesn't know you have any music. Okay. But then looked at the internet to see what your iCloud music was.
Okay, I have done the latest. I had iTunes on there first.
Yeah, they changed that in 10.15 a few years ago.
Right, and when I didn't do it that long ago, but when I installed the music app, it came up saying we will now delete iTunes. And then, you know, you had to use the music app. I'll look at it. I mean, it's on the latest Windows update, yes.
Yeah, the file should be on your computer still somewhere in the music folder. It just sounds like the library doesn't know they're there anymore.
Okay, I'll look for it then.
You're on what version of Windows?
11.
Okay.
The latest version. I mean, I don't know the version. I'm not in the house right now, but I'm on the
garage.
Yeah,
11 is the latest. Thanks.
Okay. And but it started with iTunes, which was weird. I mean, it used to be as soon as you put a CD in, it would say, do you want to import this CD? And then that stopped happening.
There's now a setting, so they switched it from automatic import to manual import. So you have to go to import yourself manually, or you can change a setting in the settings file to automatically import CDs when you put them in.
Now I'm might confused. Didn't you say that on Windows it's still iTunes?
There's an iTunes and there's a music.
My understanding is iTunes is being deleted eventually. And
it's,
Apple suggested I install.
Right. Apps. It's discontinued for the current OSs, Windows 10 and 11. But from what I could tell, it's still there if you're running Windows 7 or 8.
Okay. It must be a common problem, too, because when I Googled it, a lot of people are having the same issue.
So if he imports his CD music.
Right. So you got to find where the music is on your desktop in the home folder. You can import that back into the music app.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Thank you, Francis.
Thank you. Yep. And then there's an import settings command where you can tell it what quality to import the CDs as. The default quality now is AAC from Dolby, but you can change it to lossless or wave, uncompressed. So uncompressed audio is a meg a minute. So a 700 meg CD can hold 70 minutes. Apparently the story is the engineer that was making the CD format asked how big should it be, and the boss said, it's got to fit Beethoven's Ninth Symphony or whatever.
Right.
When he got to 70 minutes, he stopped.
Sure. Why not?
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. What's up, Jim? Jim?
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, what's up?
My question has to do with but pledges. Have you ever had a supporter who would match any pledge, either for a certain dollar amount or for a certain period of time?
Yes.
Yeah, we have a list on the Jazz website of companies that do matching pledges,
and also there are people who do matches, but mostly those are during the week, not during the weekend.
Okay. Well, I thought I never ran into that thing that you just talked about. But when I saw the regular station drive, they had a match going on. So I called them and asked, if I made a pledge to Soundbites, would that also be doubled? And the lady that normally would answer that question wasn't there. But someone in the service department said, yes, it would be. So I made my pledge at that point.
Well, thank you so much. We like to hear that.
Yeah, at the top of the online pledge form, there's a button that says check here to see if a company matches. And I've posted that link on the Soundbites website, too. But there's a lot of companies there that match, most of the larger companies in Rochester.
Well, I'm retired, so... I doubt if my company, which used to be Kodak, does any of that anymore.
They may have at the time, but Kodak isn't what it used to be.
You aren't kidding. So if there was some other company that was doing that match, but I never worked there, that probably didn't work, would it, for me?
Right.
Right.
But occasionally during the week, there'll be one-off. And for the next hour, your matches are doubled by this sponsor.
Right.
I see. Okay, well, that's great. Thanks for that information.
All right, thank you, Jim. And thank you for your pledge. Jim reminds us we are in the middle of a pledge drive, and we need your dollars. We seem to be stuck at 46,000. We need to hit 70 by Friday night. Friday at 6 o'clock, by the way. Is it 6 o'clock? Is the listener party. That'll be here at the Jazz 90.1 station. You can come down and meet your favorite on-air personalities. And
is that this week?
That's this Friday. And if you haven't made a pledge yet, that's the time to do it. But we would prefer not to have the nail biting. So it would be lovely if you made your pledge now. And there are two ways to do that. You can do it online. It takes less than 2 minutes, assuming you're not incredibly slow at mousing around at jazz901.org. Hit that big red donate now button. Or, of course, you can call the lovely and talented Cheryl at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966 800-520-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. And those of you listening during the week to the
podcast,
the archives, you should be pledging, too. Very easy to do. You will have to do it online if you're not in the middle of the day. But you can do it online. Just make sure you check the stuff for sound bites. Jazz901.org. Hit that big red Donate Now button. And hopefully we will meet our goal this Friday and not have to make additional changes to the station. Those of you who listen regularly know that we've already had to make a few changes because we didn't hit our last goal. But we would like to hit this one. And that's honestly entirely up to you. So if you like what you hear and you like what we do and you want us to keep doing it while you keep listening, you need to make that call, make that pledge. Jazz901.org, hit the big red Donate Now button, or give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Have I said 585-966-JAZZ? It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. Enough today? No, I have not. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. While you make your pledge, I'll read some news. Microsoft says users might see installation failures when trying to deploy the April 2025 Windows Recovery Environment or WinRE updates. The known issue impacts the latest WinRE update on Windows 10, versions 22H2 and 21H2, and on Windows Server 2022 systems. However, according to Microsoft, these installation errors, I love this part. According to Microsoft, these installation errors can be ignored since they are inaccurate and don't impact the functionality of the Windows device. For those of you who've been ignoring Windows errors for years, here's your vindication. Microsoft warned Windows users of increased CPU usage when typing while using recent versions of the classic Outlook email client. Last week, Microsoft also released emergency 2016 updates, Office 2016 updates to fix crashes in Word, Excel, and Outlook after installing the April 2025 security updates. And of course, the updates now need updates. Nothing new here. Do they not do any QA before they send this stuff out?
And I didn't think Office 2016 was still supported.
Well,
out of support update.
Speaking of which, we should remind you that Office 2016 and Office 2019 will reach end of extended support 6 months from now on October 14th, 2025. Shockingly, that is also the same date Windows 10 dies. After that date, no further updates, security fixes, or technical support will be available for these versions of Office, Microsoft said. They also warned that Visio 2016 and 2019, Microsoft Project 2016 and 2019, and several other products will also reach the end of support on October 14th, 2025, and advised organizations to upgrade as soon as possible to avoid security, compliance, and performance issues. The simple fact is if you're running anything that isn't the absolute latest, October 14th, 2025 is your drop-dead date. On top of all that, Microsoft is having a bit of a moment with updates. April's updates have caused as many problems as they've resolved. Mysterious folders have appeared on PCs along with dire warnings, but do not delete that folder. It's called inetpub. And now a new error pushes users to redo an update, but Microsoft has now warned that is not the case. No new update is required. Do not update again. Do not update again. The common theme here is that Microsoft is warning users they must do nothing. Well, you should do one thing. Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. It gets to be kind of a clown show when you look at every one of those things at once. I'm sorry, but it's a clown show. And while Microsoft is a successful company. with an operating system that works for many people every single day. But they have gutted their QA systems. They have gutted their programmers. And this is the result.
Mm-hmm.
You really, you know, when you get a dire warning not to do something just after they announce do something, that's a QA problem, quality assurance. QA is quality assurance. There's no assurance of Microsoft's quality anymore. And that annoys me. People say to me, why do you hate Microsoft? I don't hate Microsoft. I hate the fact that they have made themselves the number one company, and now they're just a bunch of stumble bums who have gutted their main systems. They have errors and problems and things that are easily fixed. Quality assurance is not rocket surgery. There are companies that do it every day and do it well, and Microsoft used to do it well and don't anymore, and that just makes me angry.
And
they're better than that, or they used to be.
And every month, Microsoft releases dozens, sometimes hundreds of updates for all of their products, and, you know, fix one thing and break two more.
Exactly right.
I ran into a weird situation this week. I was upgrading a company with all their Macs, getting new versions of software. I downloaded the OS installer once, so I could just use it on every computer and not need to download it every time.
Sure.
But when I took it to, like, the third or fourth computer, I started getting error messages that this installer isn't trusted. Apple released an update.
Sure. In
the middle of the day while I was inside. So if you have an Apple device, there was a bunch of updates this week to fix security problems.
There's some real-time stuff.
So 15.4.1 and 16.3.1. So there's a 0.1 now in the end of every OS you have, and you need to install the update.
That's funny. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ken?
Hi, fellas. Glad to hear your voices. And, you know, you're in trouble, I'm in trouble. So I'm doubling up on my pledge, sending it out this week.
Thank you, Ken. God bless you. We appreciate it.
I hope everybody else has a mind to do that. And I just wanted to comment on a program I've been using since 2006, January. I paid $28 for it. It was shareware at the time, but it was so phenomenal. I said, I got to have this. So I bought it. It's called Folder Match. I've been using the same version since I bought it. And I tell you, for anybody who has, well, a loved one or someone who procrastinates, we all do, I literally do not close down my computer without running this software. And it's just for files that change, personal files.
Is this the one from Sally Bryan Software? Folder Match is kind of a generic term.
Yeah, I hate to tell you. I think I went to the website once in all these years.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, Salty Brian, something.
Salty Brian, yep.
Yeah. I don't know if this guy wrote it in Assembler. I mean, man, it's lickety split.
Yep. And isn't Brian by definition salty?
Well, now that you mention it, you have a point.
Yeah.
I never thought of it that way, but I always thought maybe the guy's a sailor or something. I don't know. What's my business? You know, I don't know.
Yep.
But he writes a heck of a program, so I just wanted to pass that on.
We appreciate that. Thank you very much.
All right. Maybe you'll check it out, and it'll go in your your list.
Yeah, thanks.
Comparing folders, comparing files within the folders. I hate when I'm copying one folder to another folder, and it says you want to replace it. No, I want to merge the contents. That's never an option.
Right. Yeah. I have to tell you, I took my 2016 MacBook Pro, which now can't run any of the new operating systems. And I have upgraded it to Linux.
Any of the new Apple operating systems.
Right, any of the new Apple operating systems.
It's running the new Linux system.
It is running the latest Linux. The problem, okay, so there were shenanigans I had to go through to get the Wi-Fi to work. It's working. I had to, what I did, okay, this is inside baseball. What I did was I set up a hotspot with my phone using Bluetooth, which let me connect to the network so I could do an update of the...
Yeah, because how do you install the driver if you can't get on the network?
Exactly. So I did an update and then installed the proper set of drivers with all their dependencies. Linux does that automatically. If you say, I want this, and there are dependencies, it installs them automatically. So I did that through Bluetooth. Took a nap in the middle of it, but it worked, and that's the important part. And then I had to download a text file from somewhere, make a quick change to the MAC address, and I was up and running. So that works fine. The problem I'm now having, of course, is that the touch bar doesn't work, which means I have no escape key.
Oh, that was before. Yeah, there was a run before they put the physical escape key back.
Right.
So it was probably 2017.
2016.
Right. It was probably in 2017.
Oh, right.
The physical escape key back with the rest of the touch bar next to it.
Right. So yeah. So I'm struggling with that one. I think
left
square bracket does that, but I haven't.
Probably a program where you can remap another key to be escape.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I could remap something, but I think it's already there. And I just have to deal with that. But now, you know, the thing works. It's not, it's not a super fast machine. But it's never gonna be. I suppose if I put Tiny Core Linux on it, it would fly. Tiny Core Linux is a version of Linux that lives entirely in RAM. It does not get faster than that. It simply does not. So. Yeah, it's and it is of course in this particular case it's an Intel based Mac. They do have versions of Linux for the M series, but I don't know if they're still beta or not because honestly I don't have a machine to try them on, so I didn't bother paying much attention.
Yeah, there was a story that Linus Torvalds bought an M1 Mac to port Linux to it.
There you go.
Asahi Linux.
Asahi, yeah. Linux in general is supported continuously, unlike Mac OS or Windows. There's no point at which somebody's going to say no mas on this operating system. You have to have to move on.
They're sneaky.
It is true. Yeah, no, they do. They do indeed move on. So, you know, you can run 20.04 forever, but you're still out of date until you go to 24.04. Mm-hmm. It's the year and the month it was released.
Yeah.
But upgrading is free. Upgrading is one click, and upgrading works.
Yep.
So, you know, you can take. I had it. In fact, a machine that I had. Again, back in the day when I was working on machines for Tanzania, I still had an system on 1804, and I upgraded it, and it upgraded throughout, you know, through the 1920, 21. Mm-hmm. But it got to 2404, no problem.
No more. Yep.
And it works. It works perfectly.
And so it's kind of neat. So Asahi is a Japanese word meaning rising sun.
Yep.
But it's also a cultivar of the apple. Asahi Ringo.
Oh.
In Japanese is Macintosh Apple.
Oh,
in
that's
English.
Funny.
Nice guys. They love a good pun. We like that in the Apple world.
We love good puns. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And while we do that, you can make a pledge at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or securely online at jazz901.org. Back in just a couple of minutes. With Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And before we go back to the phones, we would like to acknowledge our friend Fred, who has made a pledge. Thank you so much, Fred. We very much appreciate it. And you know what? I don't have to say that over the air because we can talk to him. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester. What's up, Fred?
Hey, not much. I was listening to the... I was in the process of dialing when I listened to the gentleman that was upped his pledge. And I was in the process of doing that myself. So that's at least two of us that are on it.
That's what we like to hear. Thank you so much.
I was kind of frustrated listening to the program today because we get so much out of it, and there are way too many deadbeats out there. So, you know, I know you can't say that, probably politically correct to say that, but they're deadbeats. And so, you know, whoever's listening, dig deep, and you can pull out a few more coins out of the couch cushion. Something, because I really would be upset if something happens to you guys on Sound Bites because some of my peers were deadbeats.
Well, thank you.
One coffee a month. We're worth one coffee a month, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we are.
And way more than that.
Well, and let me take just a moment to talk about Jazzomatic. If I may, you can turn your radio down there, Fred, please. You can join as a Jazzomatic member. So the minimum pledge there is $10 a month. And what we do is we take a monthly pledge. So if you say, for example, $10 a month, it's $120 a year. That's good for us. But it's not a $120 bite for you. It's a $10 a month bite for you. And we take it automatically out of your checking account after you okay that, and it's a bigger hit for us and a smaller bite for you all at once, and so think about Jazzomatic, and $10, $12, $15 a month really goes a long way for us. Sorry to interrupt there, Fred.
No problem. So the only question I had, if you have now that we got that other business out of the way, is that on my HP 800 desktop computer running Linux Ubuntu, I don't run it all week long, or, you know, not, it's intermittent. I fired it up. Actually, it was still on from the other day, but I got to it, and it says no Bluetooth device found, no Bluetooth device found. So it was saying that I didn't have a Bluetooth or a Wi-Fi hardware in the machine.
Well, Bluetooth is not Wi-Fi.
Although, but a lot of the times it's one chip does both.
Right. So did it say both no Bluetooth and no Wi-Fi?
Correct. Yeah, it was nothing.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So what was your Wi-Fi hack that you've got? Yours fixed?
I used Bluetooth.
Oh, yeah.
okay, so it is two things could be happening. One is it could be that the system, that the Wi-Fi was slow to come up. That chip was slow to activate. It could also be that that chip is dead.
Okay. Does it have anything to do with me leaving it on all week long and not using it, or?
No, absolutely not.
Probably not, although reboot just to see.
Well, but yes, I would absolutely reboot to be sure, but it is possible, you know, I don't know how old your HP 800 is, but.
It's a refurbished one I got from Woot, so.
Yeah.
It's been working perfectly.
Yeah, so. It may be that that's a small problem. I also have an old laptop that doesn't have Wi-Fi in it, and so I bought like a $40 chip from Amazon that
USB Wi-Fi thing that that works fine. So it's not the end of civilization as we know it, but I would try turning the machine off, leave it off for a couple hours, see if it cools down, and then bring it back up and see if Wi-Fi comes back. If it does, then you've got a failing chip.
Okay.
Right, because it's overheating.
Right. So the dongle device, I had another machine that had neither Wi-Fi nor Bluetooth, and I bought a combination dongle.
There you go.
Bluetooth USB plug-in, which worked on that machine. So you're saying I maybe have to do that with this one?
You might. You absolutely might, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I'll have to check that out. Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks. What amazed me was it's running the latest 2404 of Ubuntu, and I plugged this dongle in, and I thought, well, now I'm going to have to go through hoops, jump through hoops.
Yeah, for Linux.
Know. Right.
Yeah.
Came right up. Came right up, and I didn't even have to type in the password because it already had that from me trying four or five times to do something.
You weren't the first guy to plug that specific model in.
somewhere on the internet, right. So it came right up, and it worked great. I was very impressed. Let us take a moment to thank Joel for his donation. Thank you so much, Joel. Joel has become our newest Soundbites family member. It's easy enough to do. You can become a member of the family quite easily. Just head on over to jazz901.org, hit that big red Donate Now button, and donate. Or you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. The lovely and talented Cheryl will be delighted to take your pledge. And then if you want, pass you on to us. But whether or not you become a member, we are delighted to have you listening. But we truly do need your support. The only way this show stays on the air, the only way this station stays on the air, is with your support. Again, we don't get government support. We don't get any of that stuff. When we say member supported, we ain't kidding. It's you folks who keep this station on the air. It's you folks who donate in from the generosity of your hearts. And it is us folks who are so, so very grateful to all those of you who do. And while Fred was talking about deadbeats, I do understand that these are parlous economic times and not everyone can afford a great deal of money, but a $5 pledge would help. A $10 pledge would help. A $20 pledge would be great. Anything, any amount you can give that would help keep us on the air is more than welcome. You know, yes, there are times when we think, well, all these people who listen without ever becoming members, you get a little upset with them, but we try not to. We do know, like I said, that not everybody's circumstance is conducive to making a pledge here, and we understand that. So for those of you who are able to make the pledge, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you so much. And I think I'll read a little Google news while we're sitting here. While the best Android phones include at least 128 gig of internal storage, some budget-friendly phones offer as little as 16 gigabytes of storage, a significant portion of which is taken up by the Android operating system and bloatware.
The very first iPhone is 4 gigs.
Yeah.
And like 70% of it was the OS.
Yep. And bloatware is all the added programs that companies put in that they get paid to put in to your machine. 16 gig of storage doesn't provide much space for apps, resulting in a poor user experience. Starting with Android 15, Google now requires Android devices to have at least 32 gig of internal storage, and that 75% of that 32 gig must be allocated to the data partition. That's the one you get to use. Google's AI, that's enough of that. We're moving on. Google's AI research lab, Google DeepMind, said that it has created an AI model that can help decipher dolphin vocalizations supporting research efforts to better understand how dolphins communicate. Didn't our man Flint already do that in the 60s? Samsung's One UI 7, the next version of its phone operating system based on Android 15, has been delayed for several of the company's latest flagship devices, namely 2024's Galaxy S24 series, the Z Fold 6, and the D Flip 6. Google blocked 1.5 billion with a B ads and suspended more than 39.2 million with an M accounts in 2024. They said the increasing enforcement activity is caused by the growing threat of AI-generated content, impersonation scams, and abuse of its ad platform. Google says it permanently suspended over 700,000 advertiser accounts for policy violations related to AI-driven impersonation scams. Of course, none of that helped in its recent Department of Justice case. Google CEO Sundar Pichai, there's no N there, has reportedly set a goal for the company to reach 500 million Gemini users before the end of 2025. Rolling out new models may help the company get there, but you know what else helps? Giving away premium features for free. Google has announced on Thursday that it is giving all U.S. college students free access to Gemini Advanced, and not just for a month or two. The offer is good for a full year of service. This, of course, causes nightmares for faculty who are now going to have to figure out whether AI wrote that paper. Android will now automatically reboot if the phone is locked for 3 days in a row. The thinking behind adding an automatic reboot for after a certain period of inactivity is to make life more difficult for someone who is trying to unlock or extract data from a phone, for example, thieves or law enforcement. Before a phone is switched on and unlocked, certain data stored within are fully encrypted and harder to access without the user's passcode. Once unlocked, on the other hand, some data get decrypted and can potentially be accessed by brute forcing the password or taking advantage of security flaws, which is generally how thieves or law enforcement get at your data. Last year, Apple rolled out essentially the same feature for iOS. This feature is optional and is starting to roll out. You may not get yours for a while. Who doesn't look at their phone for 3 days in a row? Not you, so give us a call on your unlocked phone, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Do that after you make a pledge at jazz901.org.
It says it's after you lost it in the couch cushions and you can't find it.
Right, you lost it for 3 days, and suddenly you find it, and it's locked. There has been, for years, a thing where somebody takes your phone and they try to break in, and they try to break in, and if they're good at brute forcing your password, because you unlocked it, many of the data in there are decrypted. But if the phone is turned on for the first time and not unlocked, those data are fully encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody attempts to get into your phone, by pulling the chips or whatever it is they do, they can't get at your data without knowing. And encryption is pretty hard. Now, this also assumes that your passcode isn't 1111 or 123456.
That's the same passcode I have on my luggage.
Thank you very much. Assuming you have a decent passcode and or a decent password, you'll be okay.
Yeah, there have been stories about bad guys who will call someone who then unlocks the phone to answer it, and you run up and grab the phone out of their hands. Now it's unlocked, you can get to all their data. So Apple added a feature on the iPhones called significant locations to help. So it prevents you from changing passwords and changing things unless you're at a significant location, like your house or your work. The opposite of that is when someone brings their phone into us for a repair.
Right.
They can't turn off the Find My features or get into their password because they're not in a significant location. So we had one of these this week. Go home, wait an hour. So it knows you're home. Then you can turn that thing off. Then you can come back, and we can fix your phone.
Right, right. They are making them more secure. That also makes them a little bit more of a pain in the neck when you're trying to do something like get a repair.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be.
And everyone skips that on the sign-up screen when they sign up for an appointment where it says turn this off before you come to the location.
Right.
Back
and you
up.
Have that right on your sign-up sheet.
Yep.
Yep.
Back up your data and turn off Find My.
Well, and people don't back up their data. Look, you can go to asknick.com/backups.php, and there's a link on our link list about that. You want three backups. Follow the 3-2-1 method. Three backups in two different places, one of which is off-site.
Before the device dies.
Before the device dies.
We have so many people bring it into us. I can't log in. It won't accept my password. It won't turn on. How do I get my data back? Invent a time machine, go back in time, and back it up before it died.
Yep. And the people who buy a backup drive and never use
it. Yep. I bought one of those. Here, it's still sealed in the box.
It does not take a great deal of time to start a backup and go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have to stare at the screen the entire time it's backing up. Sometimes you may get a message, but you can always hit that message when you wake up.
And then check your last backed up date to make sure it's recent. People will sometimes ask, how often should I back up? How much do I want to lose?
Right.
Back up once a month if you don't mind losing a month's worth of data.
That's exactly right.
The default backup on the Mac is an hour.
Yep.
So you don't lose more than an hour's worth of work.
Well, and that comes with something like Time Machine, right?
So, yes.
And that's automatic. It happens in the background. You don't even have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm writing code, I make sure that code backs up every minute.
Yep.
Minute. I don't want to have to go back and say, what did I do half an hour ago? I want minute. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Kevin from Farmington, New York. What's up, Kevin?
Hi. I just became a member, but I also had a question for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. We'd love to hear it.
Sure. I was wondering if you guys had a choice between what brands you trust when it comes to USB flash drives, SD cards, SSD drives, and which ones you would avoid like the plague.
In general, look at the average price they're selling for and avoid the ones that are way too cheap. There's been a big problem of fake flash drives. You know, say a 1 terabyte flash drive for $10. When that's usually the price of a 32 gig flash drive.
Right.
But the big name companies, SanDisk,
Kingston, Crucial. Those are the ones we trust.
So far I've had good luck with Team Group off of Newegg.
I haven't tried them. Also Micro Center.
Yep.
I've gotten a whole bunch of stuff from Micro Center. They're branded. I'm sure they get them third party somewhere, but I've had very good luck with those as well.
And GRC has a free program called Validrive that you can run to validate the capacity of your drive to make sure it really is. Because they go to so much effort to fake these disks. They write a custom firmware that says, yes, this is a 1 terabyte drive, but there's only 16 gigs of storage. So when you write data to an area that doesn't exist, it returns write successful.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go to read. You go to read, and there's nothing there.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So stick with things like Crucial and SanDisk and Kingston and Micro Center, and you should be fine.
A lot of times you'll see, bundle packs, 10 mm-hmm. for $50 when they're normally $50 a piece. You know, another flag.
Right. Although I buy Micro Center 32 gig drives in 10 packs.
Yep.
Because, if I need to give my daughter something, I throw it on a thumb drive and hand it to her.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah. Yep.
She's got more of my drives than I do.
I bought a thumb pack, a 10 pack the other day, a couple months ago now. I can only find two of them. where did the other eight go? So now I've got to order more. And as soon as I order more, I'll find the first patch.
Yes, you will.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I've really done well with Team Group. Then I thought, well, maybe I'll double check and see if this is reliable. If I'm, going to get
look, the reality is they've got
with anything, but
yeah, the reality is that they've got history with you, and it's a good history, so no problem.
Okay,
right. Fantastic. I mean, that's just how that works.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Kevin, and thank you for your membership.
Sure, you're welcome.
Thanks. And what about you? Have you joined, Kevin? Have you joined all the other folks, Joel and Fred and everybody else, who became members today? You could do that. It's awfully easy. Head on over to jazz901.org. Click that big red donate now button. Make your donation. Alternately, give Cheryl a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Make that call. Make that pledge. We need your support.
I've seen, lost my train of thought.
Couldn't have been that important.
Couldn't have been that important. No, it was the most important thing ever.
Was it about the thumb drives?
Thumb drives, yeah, something. Oh, yeah. Some of the newer thumb drives come with USB-A on one side and USB-C on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
And those are really handy. The one that was really weird is it was a USB-A connector, but when you flip it up, there's a USB-C under it.
Oh, how cool is that?
But how do they do that? The pins are a different size or a different width?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Lots of new machines are coming with USB-C drives, ports on them.
USB-C only sometimes.
Sometimes USB-C only. And for those of us who have a plethora of USB-A devices, I just bought a USB connector, USB-C male to USB-A female, so I can plug in. Hey, Steve's reaching into his pocket.
Yeah, I keep it in my pocket because you never know when you might need one.
So I ordered one, and it was like, I don't know, it was cheap. It was very inexpensive.
I thought got five for $5.
Yeah. So I ordered it, and it came as a three-pack, not even as a single.
Oh, wow.
So I was very pleased there. It said on the back. Apparently it was a two-pack, and they sent me three because it said on the back, we sent you an extra one. Happy something, whatever they're celebrating now and over in China. Or however long that's been sitting in the in the thing. But now if that's riding around in your pocket.
And the one problem is that the shield has come off from the connector.
Oh, yeah, there you go. But the other thing is if it's riding around in your pocket, worry about lint.
Yep.
We were talking about that the other week with phones. You stick your phone in your pocket. And eventually, lint builds up in the connector, and suddenly your phone is dead because it couldn't charge. You couldn't do anything with it.
And we've got Tyler at our office with his picks and his toothbrush and his magnifying glass. It's gotten really good about pulling the lint out. A lot of people try to use like air, compressed gas to blow it out. More often than not, because that hole is so tiny, it just blows it in deeper.
Yep.
There's no room for it to go out.
I solved it by using wireless charging. I don't care anymore. But if you've got a phone that you put in your pocket, whether it's your jeans pocket or your shirt pocket or your coat pocket, every once in a while, take a second and check the port to see if it's dirty. And if it is, be very, very careful how you clean it. You really need to be careful. You can't just start digging at it. When Steve says picks, I hope he means plastic picks because...
ESD safe.
Yeah, be safe.
Yep.
All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Michael Oden, who came in at the last minute to take over for Dave Enright, who, I don't know, wandering around somewhere downtown in his underwear. I don't know what he's doing. But particularly, I'm Nick Francesco, but particularly I want to thank everybody who called in and made a pledge. You folks are the ones who keep this show on the air, and we could not possibly be more honored and more grateful to each and every one of you. Whether you pledged or not, we hope to be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites. It's 59 minutes after the hour. We'll see you in just 166 hours.